welcome, sports fans, to episode 11 from Sports from the Six, your favorite sport podcast in Toronto, where we talk the latest in sports. We got a full radio booth today. I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, Ali Khanrav Johnny, Dwayne Turner, and our special guest today, Stacey Deshaun. And coming in to talk a little NFL football, we got Mitch Sanderson here today, and we're just excited to talk sports, guys. Welcome.
Five men in the booth, you know what's going on.
That's four and a female, but we're all right with counting.
Hey, Stacey's one of them. Stacey knows.
I know, I'm one of the boys. I hang out with you guys all the time, so I'm kind of used to it by now.
We appreciate that, Stacey. Thanks for putting up with us. And you know what? I know it's been a tough time for you the past few days with the loss of your savior, Manny Pacquiao. I don't know if a savior is the right word, but you know, how have you been feeling since the loss?
Well, okay, we were discussing this earlier, and I think it's safe to say that, yes, I kind of, as much as I wanted Manny Pacquiao to win, I'd say midway through the fight, I knew that Mayweather kind of had it in his pocket. He's an amazing defensive fighter. There's no doubt about that. I would consider this fight less exciting than their past fights. And that's just the way that Mayweather fights. He's more defensive in comparison to Manny Pacquiao. And on the flip side, Pacquiao wasn't as offensive as I'd like him to be. You know, all the hype that they were talking about, especially Freddie Roach saying that Pacquiao would win by knockout. I would hope that they would.
There's some window candy going by, but... Let's get serious here for a second, Stace. Was the result, we were just talking about all the hoopla around, was the result what it should have been? Mayweather was the unanimous winner. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with what came out of that fight?
I think it's so tough. I mean, we were looking at the scorecards again. The totals were 115 to 115 by Jeff Powell, 118 to 110 by Dave Moretti, 116-112, and then 116-112 again by Burt Clements and Glenn Feldman. And the thing is that it was a very tight fight. But needless to say, Mayweather was more successful in landing those punches. I was so annoyed watching the fight when he was against the ropes and just saying nope, denying Manny Pacquiao. Exactly, but that's right. The thing. His hands were up. He made sure to guard his body, and unfortunately, Manny Pacquiao wasn't able to get in. Their reach is different too. Mayweather does have longer arms, and
inches more reach.
Yeah, exactly, and that actually does make a significant difference in terms of when you're not fighting toe to toe. When you reach, he's able to land more of those points in opposed to Manny. So,
yeah, I really look at the connect percentage and really how Mayweather was able to land the stronger blows. We saw it was. You know, early in that fight, you noticed Pacquiao was really, really putting up. And you thought, you know, okay, as the fight goes on, is he going to be able to sustain that? Obviously, in round six, you're talking about the no. That was kind of, for me, the turning point of the fight. The point where you knew, okay, no matter what, unless Mayweather's really coming off his feet here, there's no way he's losing this match. And there's no way he's losing his undefeated streak. And to me, people will go out and they'll say, okay, the fight wasn't that exciting. But to be honest, we talked about this before. These are two fighters that are very good at their special style that they play. Obviously, we know about the injury. But Mayweather did exactly really what he's done for over half his career in being a defensive specialist and winning on technical terms.
And just for those who don't know, touching on the injury, Pacquiao does have, it's been come out that he does have an injured right shoulder that he went into the fight for. So if you didn't know that, there's a little tidbit for you. Dwayne, what do you got to say, pal?
Yeah, so Ali brings up the fact that, you know, the round six happened to be that turning point where, you know, people started to realize that maybe this is where Mayweather makes his mark. And it's interesting because Pacquiao, after the fight, during his post-fight interview, kind of said how, you know, he thought he won the fight. And I got to take him at his word because the funny thing is, around rounds 10, 11, and 12, so the commentators were bringing up the fact that, you know, this is probably where Pacquiao's now going to have to just go all in and look for that knockout because, I mean, the way the scorecard was being marked, like Stacey brought up earlier, that was his only chance of winning the fight. So it was interesting to see, and Flip, you bring up the whole injury to his right shoulder. That's going to be very interesting to see how things play out from there because it's 9 to 12 months they're saying that it's going to take for him to heal and for him to be able to fight again. So we'll see.
Can anyone say rematch?
Definitely. And Mayweather has already agreed to it, supposedly, to next year. The thing is that he says that he has one fight left in September. But that's the thing. I think that he's still going to go for Rocky Marciano's 50 or above Rocky Marciano's 49. So
here's my whole thing with this fight. It was massively hyped. anything in life that I've learned that's hyped that big, whether it be a movie, a TV show, a car, a sneaker, it's hard for anything to live up to that kind of hype. This fight was talked about more. We have things going on in the news world, important things overseas, like this, the Nepal story with the earthquake is being squashed by a fight between two guys. So in my opinion, nothing can ever live up to something with that much hype. That being said, I had certain strategical bets placed on Floyd Mayweather. We don't need to get into all the nitty-gritty details, Stacey, but I will be collecting that bottle of rum sooner than later.
Yeah, definitely.
I am a thirsty guy.
I will get my diet Dr. Pepper from Stacey as
well. Well, that's unconfirmed. But quickly, you know, just what I think overall is, and I want to read this tweet from Floyd Mayweather that came out today, which says, 19 years in the fight game, and I've had one excuse. Don't have an excuse. Winners win, and losers have excuses. Now, Mayweather, away from the boxing ring, is not your ideal citizen. We don't need to talk about that. I'm not a fan of Mayweather the guy. Mayweather the boxer wins. He's a technical fighter, and he wins. As much as it looked like Mayweather may have been on the ropes a couple times, Pacquiao was the aggressor. He's a technical fighter. He was never really in jeopardy. Mind you, what Pacquiao said is he's always on the run. That might be, but he always wins.
Right.
So you can chirp the man's tactics. You can say this and that about his away from the boxing ring life, which is a whole other ball of wax. But he's a winner. He's a champion. And he's undefeated.
So let's take this back, Flip. Okay. Me and you were the two in the booth that picked Mayweather to win this fight.
Correct.
Let's take this back to what everyone wants to know. 5 years ago, a healthy, healthy Pacquiao. Do we see a different result, or do you see the same thing?
I think that question is better suited for Stacey. I say we spin that to Stacey because she knows the fighters a lot better.
So I don't mean to be biased like last time, but I would say when you look at – that's the thing. These are aged fighters who have fought a number of fights after their primes. Mayweather, I completely agree with you in terms of him being a very successful technical fighter, and that shows in the fact that he won. But at the same time, if you go back to their prime when they were originally supposed to fight in 2010, I think that if you see how Manny Pacquiao dominated Hatton, dominated Cotto, he destroyed them, he mangled them. And I think that his aggression back then would have been more of an exciting bout, that's for sure, a more aggressive one.
Right. Who wins?
I think Manny Pacquiao would win. But needless to say, 6 years fast forward, he didn't win, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where their boxing careers finish. You know, if Manny Pacquiao is going to have a couple, one win or a couple more wins under his belt, will Mayweather go undefeated? I mean, there's rumors that he might face Khan in September.
Right.
So I guess we'll see. It'll be exciting. And I mean, everyone's saying that, you know, boxing is dead, that sort of thing, but I know that we all disagree because there's going to be other boxers that come up.
It's hard
and
to predict
revive
the sport.
Exactly.
Not every match is going to have Jimmy Kimmel come out, but I mean,
he's the real MVP.
Here, Stace, let me ask you this because I know you don't have tons of time today. So let me get this question into you because what everyone is saying is it wasn't a healthy Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm.
Is he, if he's healthy, I know it's his non-fighting shoulder. He still throws. He's a southpaw heavy fighter. Obviously, having your other shoulder injured is still huge. Him being healthy, is it a different result in this fight?
It's so hard to say because
Of course, yeah.
I agree
with
you.
We're putting you on the
spot here. I know. I mean, I'm definitely, obviously, a Pacquiao fan. It's so hard to say because I agree with you both, the ones that won, Ali Khan and Flip, in terms of him being a very technical and defensive fighter. And it's, you know, in a lot of sports, not just boxing, defense wins, right, at the end of the day. And so with Mayweather's defense and just the way that his punches did land, I mean, they're very technical. They're very strategic. And so it's hard. It really is hard to say. I think that I definitely want to see a rematch to see how
it'll
many.
Happen.
Yeah, for
there's
sure.
There's too much money
there's
on the table.
There's just too much money. And that's the thing, too. When you think about this fight, regardless of who would have won, there's going to be controversy. There's going to be, like, all this discussion. I mean, Skip Bayless, for example, and all that he said. Oscar De La Hoya has come out to say that Mayweather, you know, didn't deserve to win or that sort of thing. So there's always going to be speculation. So it'll be interesting to see if a rematch, or rather when a rematch happens, who wins. I would still bet on Pacquiao. I won't give up on you yet. So
I like your faith, though. That's proper. Go down with the ship, Stace.
So I'm going to take an unpopular opinion here.
Please.
And I have to say, I don't really think I'd be looking forward to a rematch because that's I don't think anything's going to change. Yeah. I really don't think.
And why would you? Why would you?
But that's the style, right?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, after what I just saw, I don't think even a healthy Pacquiao, because again, with the injury, he's going to be 1 year older around that.
Even more, could be more.
Right, exactly, after rehab and everything. So I don't see anything changing. I really don't. I mean, Mayweather will throw the same game at him. He'll play defensive. And unless Pacquiao can find some consistency with the jabs, we brought up the fact that he wasn't landing a good percentage of them. Unless he can find some consistency with that and see if he can land that left hand, I don't think that we're going to see a better fight.
And this is what I don't get with people and boxing fans. You know, maybe this is something unique to them, but this is what happens every Floyd Mayweather fight. He fights, quote-unquote, boring.
More towards the second half of his career.
Well, maybe that had a lot to do with him retiring and coming back and realizing what was good for him to prolong his career. But it reminded me a lot of GSP, George St. Pierre in the UFC. Highly blown-up fights, lots of hoopla around them. And then he comes and he's a technical fighter. Always won, usually. And people would come, oh, it's a boring fight, it's a boring fight. They won. So at the end of the day, $90 for a pay-per-view is a lot of money. But how much money are you going to spend if you take your kids out to the movies?
Yeah.
How much money are you going to spend if you go out for dinner for entertainment, right?
Listen, I'll bring it up here, okay? Both these men, ultimately, are the winners of this fight when you look at how much money they get out of this.
Please. Pacquiao was smiling the whole time. Like, the man was smiling. His families are set for life, for life.
So I'm sure I'm related to him along those lines.
Stacey's trying to get some of that coin. That's a lot of millions involved.
I think it's important to be said, too, because when I think all this money being generated, I think, what a waste. Why isn't some of this money going to research? Why isn't some of this money going to, you know, not to get too serious on this for a sec, but I read, and I don't know if you know if this is for sure true, but I read that Pacquiao is going to be donating all of his winnings from the fight, not all of his money made, but from the purse to charity. Is that true?
I read that as well. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, because that's the kind of thing to me that needs to be mentioned. Man's donating $40 million to charity, and then you have Mayweather who's literally burning it and washing himself in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not like I need any more reason to hate Mayweather. I just think, you know what, man? Win and go away.
Well, yeah. Pacquiao, you know, like, Pacquiao's been a societal guy. Like, he's
for
been
sure, and we've talked about the better stories. Right. People, you know, he was the people's champ. People wanted him to win. I wanted him to win.
Mm-hmm.
For betting purposes, I really wanted Mayweather to win. So,
hey, I got ripped on last week for saying my heart was with Pacquiao, and it truly is, because when you're looking at this in a perspective of stories and who's the better human being, it's unquestionable.
Oh, that's not even close.
It's not even close.
Like, we've had a certain member of our class come in this week with a Money Mayweather shirt on. We don't need to name names. Kyle Enright. But, you know,
he also
it's,
likes Duke, by the way. So
well,
I mean,
whatever. But you know what I mean? to wear something like that represents a guy who's had domestic violence issues. I know Kyle's a good guy and doesn't wear it for any. You know, it's like, it's
Kyle
just,
Enright.
how can you support this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to drop any mafia comments right now to get my co-hosts upset. But, you know, we'll just keep it moving. And overall, I thought the fight was entertaining. I had a great night. We all sat around and watched the fight. And I think for the first time in forever in my life, we actually sat around and watched a boxing match. So I think that really what should be taken away from it is it transcended the sport. It was massive.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think that, you know, in an ideal world, if they do rematch next year, I think we'd all agree to love to see Manny Pacquiao win, for sure.
Thanks a lot, Stacey, for coming on. As always, had a lot of fun talking boxing with you. And we hope to see you again on the show sometime soon.
And shout out, Stacey, for all your help behind the scenes. As always, thank you very much.
All right then, guys. Well, the next event that happened over the weekend, something that I was extremely excited about, was the NFL draft. We got to see the first round on Thursday, and then it prolonged throughout the weekend on Friday and on Saturday. So a lot of new teams got some new players. And here to help us dive into some of those transactions is Mitch Sanderson.
First time on the show, Mitch Sanderson.
Yes.
Welcome, buddy.
Mitch, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on the show. Thanks for having me. It'd be great. Big NFL guy. Watch every pick of the draft. Mm. Got a few notes here. So you got your questions, fire them at me.
Yeah, this you know, we're privileged to have a guy like Mitch on, because, you know, you want Sunday picks. this is the guy to talk to. So if you're an NFL fan, please keep your ears glued to the computer screen right now. Mitch, in terms of just overall draft experience, we were talking a bit about it the other day. Before we dive into the picks specifically, we talked about spectacles of sport and how big of a deal these drafts have become. Do you know personally, I don't know if you do know, you can say no, how big it was this year in terms of people watching?
I don't know, but I do know that every year it gets bigger. It's right. No question. They wrap it up. They make it a lot bigger. They make a bigger deal with the stars this year.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had two big superstars, Jameis Winston,
exactly.
Marcus Mariota, quarterbacks going 1 and 2 first overall. I think that storyline, it's the storylines that progress every
it.
Year.
Yeah.
It hypes it. We had a lot of off the field with the NFL this year being having so much stuff going on off the field in the
right.
news. We saw players with off the field issues drop a lot more than you saw
correct.
In other years. A guy, big name Lael Collins, was dropped totally out of the draft because of some legal issues that he may have not done anything wrong to begin with, and that's a whole other issue.
And speaking of off field issues, you know, let's jump right into the first overall pick. Then Jameis Winston has had his fair share of off field stuff, and you know, in an NFL that we've already talked about has progressively seen off-field antics take away from the on-field stuff. So what do you think ran through Tampa Bay's head? And, you know, clearly they still stuck with Winston.
Personally, I didn't agree with it. They clearly saw enough on the field. And that's what everybody was on Jameis Winston for, was he clearly has it on the field. He's a pro-ready quarterback. He makes all the throws. He's got the decision-making. He can go under center from the shotgun. Very pro ready, but his off the field issues and his maturity issues really, really, really worry me. I watched a few interviews with him before the draft, and he just didn't seem serious to me. He's very fun loving guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. But he always seems to have a smile on his face when things are going well,
mm-hmm.
When things are not going well, he kind of implodes a bit. You saw one loss in his college career, and he. If you watch that loss, that was the last game of his career, and he totally imploded. He threw like 4 or 5 interceptions, and he got into fights with his coach. He's well documented as off the field. He stole crab legs from a
which
supermarket.
Is a super weird story,
yeah,
but
and
anyway.
Then, yeah, and then which another thing that worries me was right after he was drafted, he tweeted out a picture of him sitting at his table eating crab legs, like
oh
a joke. And he deleted it a couple, like, I think an hour after. I think probably after the Buccaneers contacted him. But just something
welcome
like
to the
that.
Social media era.
Yeah, no, that just shows you. You got to be aware in something when he's around the camera.
From day one, too, to set the tone like that?
Yeah, he's a spotlight guy. He likes being in the spotlight. He'll say whatever.
That'd be concerning if I was Tampa Bay fans.
And especially, he went to school at Florida State, which is in the same which is in the Tampa Bay region.
Yeah.
That's where he's gotten all this trouble. That to me was huge. I think he would have been.
That's a very interesting point, actually, Mitch.
He would have been better off in a new setting.
For sure.
Yeah, and you saw there's been lots of guys in history that have had the same situation. They could have gone to a hometown team. Dan Marino was like that.
Right.
Could have gone to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh said no. He had a change of scenery. It was the best move of his career.
Now, let's talk more on-field with Winston. He has a chance to obviously run a dynamic up-tempo offense down in Tampa. How do you like that personnel fit with Mike Evans and Austin Jenkins and sort of the talent that he's surrounded around? How can that Tampa Bay team really improve? Can they make a push now, or is there going to be a time that he'll need to be acclimated with the league and really adjust himself to the NFL style of play?
I think he's certainly going into a great situation in Tampa Bay. Mike Evans, you mentioned, he's another guy with maturity issues, though. But he's
definitely
a phenomenal player. Jensen Jackson, another great player. Their tight end Austin Seferin Jenkins, another good weapon. They just signed former Bears head coach Mark Trestman to be their offensive coordinator. He's a creative guy.
Shout
he's
out to CFL.
He's been called the Willy Wonka of football. And I think that's a
this
big
is why we bring Mitch on for these nicknames, because I had no idea he was called the Willy Wonka of football. And that's awesome. Side note. Anyway, go ahead, Mitch.
I think the biggest struggle is going to be for him, not the pro style. He played against a lot of pro style defenses. He played in a pro style offense. It'll be the losses. It'll be because the team's not. He had one loss in college, and that worries me because this team is good, but
they're going to lose a lot.
They're going to lose a lot. They're at very best a 7-9 team right now, and that's being pretty optimistic
that's
with a rookie
yeah,
quarterback
for sure. Speaking of optimistic, here comes Dwayne.
So it's funny.
What's up, buddy?
It's funny you say that actually, because I actually think that Tampa Bay has a good chance of competing in that division. Because let's remember, Carolina won that division at 7-9. So
let's be clear on his prediction then. Better or worse than 7-9?
I think they can get to with Winston at quarterback because that was the major need. I can't put any prediction just now because I have to go through the rest of the roster.
Dodging bullets.
I don't think it's completely out of the realm to see them as a 500 team.
Now, I have a question for the whole table, probably Mitch first, but didn't they just not re-sign their starting running back?
Okay, so that's Martin? Doug Martin.
Martin.
Okay, so they refused to pick up his option, and it makes sense. I mean, after his rookie year, he's been going downhill.
And
his
so
production
who,
has gone down.
Who's the lead back there?
They have a few options. I think Mitch, you can touch on that.
So Charlie Sims, Mike James, and Bobby Rainey are the guys that they had last year. None of those guys are starting caliber running backs, but the Buccaneers' run game wasn't terrible. It was middle of the pack last year. Doug Martin, they didn't pick up his fifth year option, so I believe he's still on the team this year, but he won't be next year. He's a guy that's just his style of running. He's a smaller guy, but he's been called the muscle hamster, and he kind of bounces off of guys, and he looks for contact, and guys like that don't last very long unless you're a special case like Marshawn Lynch, but most guys don't last at that size.
And I just want to mention one other thing, because what goes underrated is the fact that the offensive line, they do a lot of the work, and that's one of the reasons why Tampa Bay last year made a trade with the Patriots to bring in one of their offensive linemen, because Josh McCown, the combination of Josh McCown and Mike Glennon at quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was a disaster. One of the reasons for it was because of the offensive line. They had poor offensive line play, and whether it's the quarterback or the running back, you're not going to get a lot of production from either position if that's the case. So,
right.
Mitch, you're going to have to help me on this one. I can't remember if they addressed the offensive line in the draft, but hopefully they did, because whether Winston's at center or not, it really won't help him.
Well, yeah, they did kind of address the offensive line in the draft. They took offensive tackle from Penn State in the second round, and also in the second round they traded back into the later in the second round to take a really interesting guy, Ali Marpet, who went to Hobart College, which is a Division III school. He was the only Division III prospect, went to the combine this year. I believe he was the only Division III player who's on the team right now. He's an offensive guard, but that's the guy that worries me, because he dominated everybody he played against in Division III. So that was, when you have tape of a guy who never fails, who made his block, he made every single one of his blocks in his last season, in his senior season, and he's a academic All-American as well. That's a good pick, but that's a kind of a risky pick, and I think they kind of stretched to address that need at the offensive line, because that's certainly where they were weakest.
So let's move on now to the second overall pick in the draft.
Please, let's.
Of course, the talk of the draft, and we discussed this last week, were the two quarterbacks. Tennessee holds on to that pick, and they picked Marcus Mariota, of course, pronounced as Marcus Mariota for everyone that watched the draft. What are your thoughts on him here, Mitch? And really, can he also compete to be one of the offensive rookies of the year here in the NFL this season?
He's a really interesting guy. I love Marcus Mariota. I was disappointed that he went to Tennessee and that they didn't trade that pick, because Mariota is probably the most ready guy to be a dual threat quarterback in the NFL and have long success with that. There's nobody who's a smoother runner who can throw the ball on the run as well. Yeah, great rapport, academic All-American. This guy is across the board a great guy. The only knock on him was the system that he played at Oregon.
Right.
But I think that's a kind of a revolutionary system, and I think that the more of the spread you're seeing come into the NFL, and he's going to go to Tennessee, and they've said now that they'll try and morph the offense around him a little more. But Ken Whisenhunt is a guy that's always the head coach there. He's always run a pro style offense. I didn't like it. I thought that they could have got more for him. There was the big trade on the offer on the board was apparently from the Eagles was for the saw was for two first round picks, a second round pick, and Fletcher Cox.
Wow. So Dwayne,
too much, way too much.
As an Eagles fan, is that's too much for you?
Dwayne says that's too much. I disagree with Dwayne. I think that that with what the Eagles had, Marcus Mariota is worth two picks, two first round picks to them. They're just because he would fit in their offense perfectly. He's the prototype for that offense. Fletcher Cox, I think Mariota would make up the offense would make up for Fletcher Cox, and then if Mariota came on, they have Sam Bradford. They would move. I would assume they would move Sam Bradford for at least a second round pick, and they get that second round pick back. So really, you would just be going. It would just be a trade for two firsts and Fletcher Cox.
Ideally, what do you see out of him? Do you see him taking a back seat to Zach Mettenberger to start, sort of learning, or do you see him right out of the gate really coming out and taking seeds of that position?
Well, the Titans have said that they want to start him week one, but Zach Mettenberger, to his credit, said he doesn't want to trade. He wants to compete with Mariota. I really like that Zach Mettenberger.
I agree. I like Mettenberger as well. I think I've actually read an article where the Titans came out and said, before the draft, that they believed in Mettenberger's
skills.
Like him. They look at him like another big quarterback, like a Roethlisberger. We've talked about cheeseburgers in this podcast before. I'm getting a little hungry. But Mitch, I wanted to ask you about the Titans' second round pick, addressing a need at the wide receiver position. A guy, Doriel Green Beckham, out of Missouri. What do you think, if any, the impact will be of him with Mariota? Because I'm reading his stats right now. They're comparing him to a young Randy Moss.
Yeah, he's had the Randy Moss comparison, the Calvin Johnson comparison. His issues are another. He's another off the field guy.
Okay.
He had two. I believe he had two marijuana arrests.
Smoking that Chiba.
Yeah, at Missouri, he was the number one when he came out of high school.
Chiba.
He was the number one. Player on the board, regardless of position, everybody had him as the number one player. He chose to go to Missouri; that's where he's from, and that like Jameis Winston, I think that hurt him. He stayed at home and he hung out with his buddies, and he got in trouble. He went on to he transferred to Oklahoma, but he never played there. He went to the draft. He got in trouble in Oklahoma as well. I'm not sure what it was, but that's somebody. I think that was a stretch. That was a pick. They went. We have Mariota now. Who's he going to throw to?
Mm-hmm.
Probably their number one target last year was Delanie Walker, their tight end, who before that was a second string tight end in San Francisco. So
I guess that just goes to what you were saying, is Mariota's not necessarily the best fit in Tennessee.
No, he wasn't, and I think they had a lot of holes to fill. That's why I thought they should have taken that trade. They could have gotten a lot better. But with that, with Doriel Green Beckham, his ability is certainly there, and I think that the Titans saw, we have Mariota, who's he going to throw to? And they stretched on the guy. And I hope they did their research on him, because a lot of teams just didn't have him on their board. He was just character issues were too big a concern for him. But he's a massive target, and he'll be great if he can pull it together.
So we bring up Doriel Green Beckham, and Mike Mayock of the NFL Network, he's brought up the fact that he actually thinks that him included, but some of the other wide receivers that were taken, they could actually outshine the wide receiver class last season, which was arguably one of the best the NFL has ever seen.
Shout out Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes,
one time.
Yes, Odell Beckham Jr.
Those catches, though.
play of the year at the end there. What do you think, Mitch? Do you think, I mean, the likes of Kevin White, Amari Cooper, Jalen Strong, guys like that, do you think that they could possibly be better than what we saw last season?
That's going to be tough. That last season was a tremendous group of receivers. I think that Cooper and White are going to follow in similar paths as AJ Green and Julio Jones a few years ago, getting drafted both in the top seven. I think those guys went in the top five, but similar players. Cooper, very polished. I think he's going to be great. Kevin White's going to slide right into where Brandon Marshall was in that Chicago Bears offense. And he's basically a younger, faster version of Brandon Marshall. I didn't like the third receiver, Devontae Parker. I like Devontae Parker, but he's going to Miami, where they just traded for Kenny Stills. They got lucky with Jarvis Landry last year. They just signed Greg Jennings. I'm not really sure where Devontae Parker fits in there. But I'd say no to your question. I don't think they're going to be quite as good as last year, mm-hmm. just because last year there was six or seven guys that were really good, and they're good players this year. receivers went higher than I thought they would. Nelson Aguilar didn't have him going in the first round. I think it was a good pick, good fit by the Eagles, but didn't have him in the first round. Didn't have Breshad Perriman going in the first round. He was a guy, at the end of his season, was about a fourth-round pick, but because his measurables were great, his combine was great, he rose into the first round. I hope he works out for the Ravens because that'll be a good replacement for Torrey Smith. But yeah, overall last year was I think, just a little too deep.
Mitch, before we move on here, I just wanted to ask you, we've touched on a bunch of the players taken in the first round. I want to know what you think. A player that you think should have gone higher, or maybe a player that you think a team really scored on, looking at that first round draft. Is there someone you thought should have gone higher? Is there a team you think really, wow, that was a really good pick for them?
One guy that I thought should have gone higher, but not much higher, just really two picks, was Landon Collins. He was the first pick of the second round, but the Packers took a safety, Demetrius Randall, in the first round. He did not have a first-round grade on him by anybody's standards, really. And last year they took Ha Ha Clinton Dix, one of the best names in football.
Definitely.
And he was he went to Alabama with Landon Collins. They were, the year before, they were considered one of the best safety tandems in the country. I think they missed on that pick. I think that would have been a really good hole. He should have gone a little higher. The biggest score was the Jets. The Jets got Leonard Williams, sixth overall, and Leonard Williams, by a lot of people's standards, was the best player in the draft. They lucked into that pick. There was no doubt about it, and they defensive line is arguably the best part of their team, but they couldn't pass on a guy like that. I had him and Amari Cooper as the two safest picks in the draft. Those guys are the most pro-ready. They're going to slide right in, and they're going to be good. But the Redskins took Brandon Scherff, offensive guard from Iowa, fifth overall. That was a big shock.
Yeah, that's
to me. I thought that was a poor pick.
Agree.
Didn't like the Redskins draft at all, and they should have gone Williams there. But the Jets walking into Williams was a big shock.
Yeah, and you would think a guy like Williams, who brings so many mismatches and the versatility that he adds, would really slot in there,
especially in a division against Tom Brady. That's always key for the guys in that division. You've got to get good pass rush, because that's the only way to beat Brady, is to get hands in his face.
So, there was some clear losers there on draft day, but, we also had some champions of the draft day, and if we shift our focus over to Europe, we also have some champions going on over there too, don't we, boys? Some pretty good international soccer going on. Are you guys as excited about this as me? Because this has been some pretty good footy going on.
The last 2 days have been super exciting. We've seen some things we didn't expect, some things we've gotten all too used to expecting, like the beautiful move there by Lionel Messi.
Yep.
And it's just been an outstanding first leg of the semifinals.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, it all started off with Juve going against Real Madrid, hosting Real Madrid, and that was a fantastic game. It finished 2-1, so they go back. They're going to be going back to Spain to finish that second leg. And
yep.
Let's
start with that match.
That's a fascinating matchup, because obviously Real Madrid, they were still a bit banged up. They were missing
Benzema up front.
Exactly, and Luka Modric as well. So we'll see if they get them back. I don't know what the status is on them. And I mean, Tevez had a great game.
Huge game for Tevez.
Great
game. He really looked like he was playing like a man possessed.
Right.
I don't know the exact stat on how many games in a row it's been that Juve hasn't lost at home, but it's like in the 40s. Hmm. They haven't dropped a match at home in a long time. They're back-to-back reigning Serie A champs, and going into this matchup, not a lot of people were giving them the respect that they deserve.
Even with the great home record there.
Right, and we talked about it on this show. Dwayne even talked about how Saul and Faisal Kamisa, shout out Faisal from Sportsnet, talked about how that midfield of Juventus could cause problems for Real, and they did just that. They played a spirited match at home. Gigi Buffon continues to amaze me. The ageless wonder, yep. Gigi Buffon. We watch it over at, I like to call it the Centennial Clubhouse at my house. Watch it with our good friend Matt Malandrucolo. Huge Juventus fan.
That's right.
That's a big result for Juve at home. Don't get me wrong. Real's not going down without a fight going back home. But I thought it was a great match.
Yeah, I honestly, when I looked at Real this week, they lacked a little bit of creativity, and they really struggled in the midfield. Sergio Ramos is one of the people that people bring up as really having struggled. Yet they still get that road goal, that all-important
huge road goal
there.
That's
so.
Right.
They're fine moving forward in terms of the aggregate. What's more concerning is they, you know, in terms of a Real game, they had a couple of chances. Right. Rodriguez put it off the bar with the header. So that could have been a 2-2 game. But usually when you watch a Real match, they have way more slashes to the net where the D gets exposed. The D didn't look exposed on Juve, and they're clearly not intimidated by the Spanish Giants.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, again, with some of these guys coming back, because this was actually Bale's first game in a while that he came back, and that's the problem. They've been banged up all season, and you're getting back guys in the middle of the semifinals of the Champions League. So to build up that consistency again with the players you're around, it's not easy, and it can't come right away. So going back to Real Madrid, like we mentioned, they have the away goal, so all they really need is just one home goal,
right,
and to make sure that they don't concede anything else from Juve. So
I guess
it'll be
it's
a
also
great match.
Sorry, not to cut you off, but it's also, you mentioned injuries there. Important to note that Juve's doing this without their potential best midfielder in Pogba.
Yes.
So I think it's just Juve deserves some credit here.
Yeah.
You know, I personally didn't give them any shot going into this match.
I mean, think about it. I mean, you have four teams going into the semifinals. You have Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Juventus.
Right.
I mean, people would, I mean, in terms of figuring out who the best of those four teams are, that might be the difficult choice, but most people would easily say that Juve was probably the weakest of the four.
Yeah, and you know what? I guess that's what happens when you talk about massive soccer giants that are Bayern and Barca and Real. It's, you know, Juve is huge in their own right, but when you're talking those three, it's hard to not pick out a lame duck or an ugly duck.
You know what? I will say this. Real Madrid, at this point, they're still fighting for La Liga here
before
the second leg. Meanwhile, Juve, the one advantage that they have
that's
is Serie A.
Yeah, that's locked up.
I mean, it's locked up, so they have a chance to rest, really. And if they're going now to go out and win this battle, they have an opportunity to rest players. They have an opportunity to come there with their best attack with their current lineup and try and sneak something out.
And I guess, just so everyone knows, headed back to Spain, it is 2-1 Juventus on aggregate.
Right.
So next week, tune in for your Champions League semifinals. But the second semifinal, a little bit more of a decisive victory in that one. We have Barca at home at Camp Nou yesterday. 3-0 victory against Bayern Munich. Two beautiful goals from Lionel Messi, and then third
from
nail
Neymar.
In the coffin from Neymar.
That's right.
And these, I think before we talk about the match, these three Barcelona strikers need to be talked about here for a second. Luis Suarez, Neymar, and Lionel Messi are just, these guys are setting all kinds of records, and it's just so exciting to watch.
I'm telling you, what a game. I mean, Lionel first of all, Bayern Munich, in my opinion, they have the best keeper in the world in Manuel Neuer.
I agree.
And for the first goal that Messi scored, to be able to beat him short side like that, I mean, that was what an incredible strike. And then the second one, I mean, everyone's already probably seen it already. I mean, he put Boateng on his back.
Oh, my goodness.
Him up.
Yeah,
and then,
if you haven't seen that highlight, Prince Boateng hit the deck hard.
I'm putting that as the best crossover of the year. I know Steph Curry got Chris Paul, but my goodness, that is the cross of the year in my
mind.
Oh, man,
I'm telling you. I mean, and then to just chip it over the defender, it was
beautiful.
What a beautiful goal. And then, Flip, you mentioned the Neymar goal. I mean, what happened was, I mean, Bayern was just looking for at least one away goal going back to Munich. So they were pressing, and then they had nobody left back there to defend. So that's why Neymar was able to finish it off with the 3-0 final. But yeah, it was an incredible game. Messi was unbelievable. I had goosebumps watching the game just because the whole crowd was just cheering his name after that fantastic second goal. And he's an incredible player to watch. I mean, I never get tired
of
watching him.
He really is. It's really a treat for sports fans, man. Like, watching this guy on the field, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be the biggest footy fan. You know, like, you guys know that I'm major for North American sports predominantly, but when I do get the chance to sit down and watch a match like yesterday and watch it start to finish, Magical Messi doesn't do this guy justice. He truly is, in my opinion, the best soccer player of this generation. Cristiano Ronaldo, people will argue. I don't like underwear models that play sports. That's just me. But Messi is just calm, collected, ice in the veins. Nothing seems to rattle this guy. I see Ronaldo crying like a baby constantly. I'm a Messi fan, clearly. And watching him yesterday, it's just I will now watch the next match because of him.
He is your prototypical leader. And I tweeted it out yesterday, you know, Real really do recognize Real. You saw all the players that were just like, this is normal. This is what they expect from Messi. Kobe Bryant tweeted it out himself. My brother is the biggest Barcelona fan on this planet.
Wow. Right.
And yesterday he's just like, you know, he's taken so much flack throughout these last couple of years. And it's really easy to sort of lose track of how great he really is. And it's moments like this that define truly how spectacular of a career he's had and what he's still continuing to do even now.
I mean, guys, help me. I may be wrong with this, but he's either 27 or 28. I mean, he's still in the prime of his career. I mean, he's broken plenty of records, and he's still going to be breaking records in the future.
And that's the scary part, really.
It's unbelievable. So, like Flip said, I mean, it's must-see TV anytime Barcelona's playing. Because, I mean, it's Messi, Suarez, and Neymar, and so many others.
I think also what is needed to be said here while we're on this topic is Neuer, the goalie for Bayern Munich, you know, we've talked about, he's our favorite goalie in the world. He's could be the best goalie in the world, and Messi's making this guy look like he's just, you know, some third-tier goalie. And that's saying something, because this Bayern Munich team is like 80% of the starting German world championship team, and they were looking like, I don't know what, like pylons out there.
And I'm glad actually you bring that up, because you could almost say this is almost vindication for Lionel Messi, because remember
a little
his Argentina
for sure
a club ended great up point. Losing to Germany in the World Cup
great
to
point.
That whole yep. German team that you mentioned, and Neuer arguably was the best player in the tournament. I mean yep. obviously Messi ended up getting the player of the tournament award, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure he felt pretty nice being able to beat him twice in that game.
And you know what, Dwayne, that is a great point, but you also bring up something that I wanted to mention. Before this match, there was a little bit of back and forth between the teams, and actual Neuer calling out Messi, saying, quote, he was going to show him who's boss when they met yesterday.
Ooh, boy.
So the fact that he said that and Messi got deuce on him, like the Barca's got their head held high, going back to Germany, anything can happen. Just look at the last game between Bayern Munich and Porto.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jonathan Cervetta. they were down coming back home, and then they won 6-1.
I mean, 5 goals in the first half.
Right,
I mean,
and you're not going to do that to Barca. Let's not get out of control here. But, you know, anything can happen with a world-class team like Bayern Munich. There is some amazing players on this team, and they just didn't come to play yesterday.
Exactly.
But 80 minutes through, it's 0-0.
Right,
Messi bangs into in the 80th and whatever 80 something minute, and then Neymar caps it off. So, you know, 90% of the game it was 0-0. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, to be honest, I don't doubt that Bayern Munich can score goals. I mean, to say that they're going to score 3 in the game, that wouldn't shock me.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, I'm going to repeat it again.
How do you stop those 3 guys
from scoring?
Yeah, again? how
exactly?
And at this point, barring like cement bricks in the net, like bottom up to the top, I'm not sure how they're going to keep the ball out. But
and you know what? I got to bring up the fact that, you know, Bayern are hurt. I mean, I was shocked that Lewandowski actually even played. You saw
him with the mask.
With the mask. I mean, he's having concussion issues, I believe. So, and they're still missing Robin. So, you know, their depth is being severely extended right now. So, again, we'll see what happens in the second leg.
Yep.
I cannot wait to watch it. And I'm sure you guys feel the same way.
Yeah, ultimately, I do see Barca winning this. And I just look at the construction of their team as if they needed more when they went out and got Suarez. I mean, that team to me is just too deep. I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win this Champions League when I look at it overall. They have a high-powered offense. They have a very, very sturdy goaltender. And I think that's going to be enough, really, to come away with this.
I agree, AK. And you know what? I'm going to be tuning in next week regardless. It's going to be exciting stuff. But speaking of exciting stuff, we need to announce something to all the listeners out there. We're going to be putting up the Sports from the Six podcast on a new platform. We're going to be trying out SoundCloud.com. So please check us out at SoundCloud.com/Sports from the Six. All the latest and past episodes will be going up there soon. Please check us out on there. Please continue to follow us on Twitter. We have a new Facebook page as well. We're trying to splash across all media platforms here. We're going to continue to push forward with episodes, and thank you very much for listening again this week. Thank you to Mitch Sanderson for jumping on to talk NFL. Big shout out again to Stacey to come back on and talk. Manny Pacquiao going down. And you know what, guys? please continue to listen, and thank you so much for the support. On behalf of Ali Conrad, Johnny, and Dwayne Turner, Flip Livingstone, signing out.
Peace.
Thanks, guys.